The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
A very warm welcome to all of you to this call with Howard Marks, co-chairman of Oaktree Capital Management. Very grateful to Howard to take time out of his schedule in this very turbulent period to be with us and share his perspective on what is quite a unique moment in history. Howard, I'll turn it to you to provide some initial remarks and your assessment of this situation.
Well, you know, John, it's a pleasure to be with you today. I wish for different circumstances, but I guess I have no control over that. This is obviously one of the major events in the history of my investment career, which spans now 51 years, in the history of investors, in the history of the world, you know, a pandemic. I put out a memo 2 weeks ago by the title, Nobody Knows. And, you know, I think it was very important at the time to say that. I still think most people don't know, you know, how far the virus is going to go, how many people will be affected, what the effect on business will be, or how far the market will go in response. And I think it's extremely important always as an investor to acknowledge what you don't know. You know, I've been using a quote in the last couple of years from Mark Twain, American author, who said that it's not what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for certain that just ain't true. And I believe very strongly that a statement that begins with, I may be wrong, but, or I don't know, but, is unlikely to get people into trouble. This is, you know, very significant. You know, economic activity in most countries is shut down. Stores, restaurants, bars, airlines, cruise ships, movies, conferences, all have had some diminishment of their activity, if not a total dead stop. Hold on, please, just a minute.
Yes, Ed. Chip Keller, I'm on the line. Thank you.
So, you know, I feel bad about the business owners. I feel bad about the workers. The workers will lose their jobs. We're talking about a million job losses, perhaps, is the one estimate in the month of April. These people, you know, don't have any resources. Maybe they'll get unemployment insurance. Maybe the government will do something special. But going into it, we talk in the States a lot about the fact that some percentage, like 50 or 60% of all Americans, can't respond to a $400 million emergency. Well, the emergency is here. And if half the people don't have $400 and lose their jobs, you know, there's going to be great hardship. So most people are estimating a severe decline in GDP in the second quarter, not in the first, which is interesting. Goldman Sachs, for example, has a minus five in the second quarter. But then plus three in the third and plus four in the fourth. And, you know, what I'm going to say is nobody knows. I would love to see a quick restoration of economic activity. The markets have already responded, you know, severely, down 30 from the February 19th high as of last night. You know, of course, we don't know what that means, but I think that most big declines are down 50, plus or minus. This particular decline you know, the evidence on where the stock market stood at the high is very mixed. The PE ratio was about 19 compared to the post-war average of 15 or 16, a 20% high. In 2000, it was 32, double the norm. You know, 19 doesn't, it makes it expensive, but not ridiculous. The Shiller cyclically adjusted PE ratio shows it to be very high. The Buffett ratio of stock market value to GDP shows it to have been essentially at an all-time high, matching 07. So mixed signals. I think the market was a little high, down 30. I don't think it's high anymore. It's probably not at a giveaway level either. Earnings, S&P earnings have been revised in the Goldman case, for example, down to 158 from 173. You put a 15 multiple on 158, and you basically get about where we are. 15 is normal. So, you know, it's not depressed. It's not panic levels. You know, we could get the panic levels. I certainly don't know if we'll get the panic levels. But, you know, when you're down 30, the one thing you know is that it's a lot cheaper than it was a month ago. And there's a lot of pessimism, not necessarily undeserved, but certainly the market has switched from being ruled by optimism to pessimism. And, you know, I just think that it's if you have money, it's reasonable to spend some of it here. I'm not saying it's the bottom. Finding the bottom is always a fool's errand. And nobody can say this is or is not the bottom, by the way. You know, things are on sale. Does that mean there aren't going to be further markdowns? It does not. But I do think that it's worth spending some money today. Maybe I should stop, John, and I should give you a chance to ask all the questions you've prepared.
So the market may not be at a giveaway level, but certainly some sectors do seem quite beaten down. The sectors that are in the front lines of this, such as travel, etc., but also oil and gas, where another dynamic is playing into what's already a bad situation. How are you looking at those sectors that truly have been crushed completely, it seems?
You know, I'm not familiar enough with any specific industries or sectors to have an authoritative opinion. Now, of course, today I don't know if there is such a thing as an authoritative opinion, but I would, you know, when we go from the general to specific, I would tend to trust what I say less. Having said that, you know, I mean, look, everybody knows. Let me back up. When my son was in college or and studying investing, and he would come to me with bright ideas, and he would say, you know, we should buy this company because they have a good new product. My answer to him was always the same. Who doesn't know that? And that is the operative question for the value investor. What the value investor makes his good money by finding value that other people haven't found. If everybody has found the value and priced that value into the stock or bond, then you're not getting a bargain. So what you want to do is you want to find things that other people haven't figured out. And now it's not good news, it's bad news. So it's value in reverse. So you say that the travel, for example, has been at ground zero of the problem. Who doesn't know that? Everybody knows that. The hotels are terrible. The cruise ships are terrible, and the airlines. And so they have taken a huge knock. So, you know, see, the most naive of investors would say today, the outlook for the travel agents industry is terrible. We should get out of the stocks. The question is, does everybody know the outlook is terrible? Has everybody priced that terrible outlook into the stocks? Is it too late to get out? Is it time to get in? Has the bad news been incorporated? inadequately reflected or excessively infected? That's the question. So the mere fact that these industries are at ground zero of the of this incident, you know, is not a sell signal. I would look at these if you have staying power. I mean, these things are not going to bounce back. If you have staying power, I would look at those industries just as much, just as well as I would look at an industry which is relatively protected from the virus and its effects. Now, you talk about energy. Energy has been a mess. You know, the price of oil hit a high of 110. I'm gonna guess that that was July of 15, if I'm not mistaken, something like that. And you know, then it's been declining rapidly. It got down to it could have been 14 now that I think of it, but 14 or 15, it was up at 110. I think it was in January, February of 16 that it hit 27. You know, I can tell you, when I looked at it at 27, it looked a lot cheaper than it was at 110, but nobody could say it wasn't going down. And, you know, when it hit 27, a lot of people say, well, it's going to 10 or zero. So, you know, oil's been in a real problem situation ever since then. It hit 27 in early 16, as I recall. It bounced up into the 70s when things settled down and when the OPEC got the supply-demand relationship under control. And then now it's back down. Last price I heard was back to 28. Is it going to 75 or is it going to 10? This is not virus related, but although of course reduced economic activity will reduce demand and tend to hit the price. This is a supply demand, and it's actor specific. In other words, the Saudis cut production to try to keep the price up. The Russians did not. The Saudis wanted the Russians to cut. The Russians said, no, we're going to produce. The Saudis said, well, if you're going to produce all you want, then we're going to produce all we want, and we're going to hurt you by cutting the price. And they've done that. So that's why the price is in the 20s. What's next? Who knows? Will the Russians capitulate? Will the Saudis capitulate and say, you know what, we don't want to sell oil at 28. We're going to restrict the production again. So nobody knows. So this is both economic and it is, as I say, actor specific. But that doesn't mean we know the future. Having said that, you know what? Like I said, what's the outlook? Have the reductions in the outlook been inadequately reflected or excessively reflected in the price? These are the questions that a value investor asks. And, you know, it would be silly to say the oil industry's a mess, we won't invest, because we should be willing to invest wherever the price is too low and the psychology is too negative.
Howard, to what extent, when thinking about how bad it can get for stocks or whether in fact this is an opportunity, to what extent does the level of interest rates figure into this? Where, you know, what's the case for bonds here when you've got interest rates so low? It would seem that stocks do provide the better yields going forward.
Sure. Well, did you read my memo of last week, John?
Absolutely.
Maybe 2 weeks ago today. Okay, so I think I said in that memo, I know I did, that here you got the 10-year Treasury selling at less than one at that time, and, you know, the S&P yields more than two and has growth potential. And the earnings yield is six. So, you know, I think I said it'd have to be crazy to sign up for a half a percent yield return for 10 years when you could buy stocks that yield more and the dividends should grow over time. I still believe that. So the point is that we all talk about the PE ratio. We have to think about the EP ratio. We have to take the earnings, price earnings ratio of 16 over 1, or let's say today it's, I guess today it's about 15 over 1. And we have to flip it, 1 over 15. So 1 over 15, a 15th, is about 6.7% decimal equivalent. So 1 15th, which is the earnings price multiple, is equivalent to a 6.7% yield on the S&P 500. And so everything else being equal, the lower yields go in the environment, the lower the demanded yield, earnings yield, or dividend yield on stocks can go. And the lower the, for example, the lower the earnings yield, the higher the, in other words, the lower the EP ratio, the higher the PE ratio. And so a higher PE ratio suggests a higher stock price. So in theory, lower interest rates justify higher stock prices. And you know, that is probably one of the elements that caused the stock market to come back. Let's see, March 9th, just 11 years ago, March the 9th of 09, the market hit its low. The S&P was 666, as I recall, on March 9th of 09 versus 2400 today. You know, one of the things that the government of the U.S. and other governments did is they took yields down, interest rates. So, you know, if you can't get but zero or negative by putting your money in a bank, you tend to say, well, you know, I'll go out and buy some stocks instead, or some corporate bonds. So these were the actions. This interest rate cutting were the actions that brought prices back. And they saw, as I say, low yields, which we certainly have the lowest in history today, justify higher asset prices. And that should be one of the things that supports the stock market in the period ahead.
To what extent are you concerned about things like passive, the high share of passive investing or machine trading or those kinds of things exacerbating the current situation?
That's not top of mind for me, because I hope that the passive investor or the passive investment fund will be less likely to sell emotionally. Now, the investor in the passive fund could sell emotionally, but the passive fund is not going to sell emotionally. It doesn't have emotions. There's no people. So I don't think that will only be a medium for panic. If people were going to panic in other circumstances about active investing and withdraw their money from the market or take it away from their managers or their funds, then they'll do it now with regard to their passive funds. But I may be missing something, John, but I don't see it as a differentiator.
Howard, since your last memo came out, I hope we have learned a little bit more about the situation. To what extent do you think we can look ahead and to kind of the end of the tunnel here and say, we have social distancing, flattening the curve, we should be able to tell that this won't last, and in fact, we will have an opportunity to return to the previous situation?
Well, you know, it all depends on whether you want to take an optimistic or a pessimistic gloss. You know, it certainly seems, A, that we are doing testing and distancing and quarantining. And so maybe we can bend the curve so that the new daily cases stop growing. Seems possible. Number two, we might get a vaccine. Number three, there's a hope that this disease doesn't like warm weather. And there's a reason why flus and things like that are seasonal diseases. They tend to happen in the winter. They like the cold weather. Bacteria like hot weather and viruses like cold weather. We hope that this follows that pattern. If you look at these seasonal diseases which have come up over the last few decades, it does seem that they last through the cold weather and that they die out in 3 to 6 months. That's what the optimist would say, and it's all quite reasonable. The pessimist would say, who knows? We have to husband our resources, and we don't want to turn optimistic before the bottom. I would say, in the hope that it's a 3 to 6 month thing, in the hope that prices are reasonable, we're going to put some money out. By the way, I'm not talking about Oaktree. We don't buy stocks for the most part, so nobody should say that I'm saying Oaktree is doing it. And I'm not going to tell you what Oaktree is doing, so you shouldn't base what you should do on what I'm doing. But, that's certainly a reasonable position to take. And given the weight of the, I wouldn't say evidence, but the weight of the opinion that it's a 3 to 6 months thing, and given the fact that the market's down 30% from a not ridiculous high, that's why I say it's probably reasonable to spend some money here. But I can't tell you, nobody will tell you that this is the low. Some people will tell you, but they can't do it, of course. And the other thing is, nobody can tell you it's not going lower, or that the disease is not going to get worse, or that it's not going to take more than 3 to 6 months. So nobody can justify spending all their money here. But I think you can't justify spending all your money, and I think you can't justify not spending any of your money. So that's my opinion.
I'll take just two quick questions, and then we'll wrap it up.
Well, you may give quick questions. I don't really tend to have quick questions.
I'll leave the answers to you. In terms of a cyclical versus defensive exposure, other things equal, how are you looking at that? Or I shouldn't say other things equal.
Well, John, it depends. Everything, I think that this exercise is just another piece of evidence, as I've been saying for recent years, the most fundamental underlying religious question about investing is, which is more important to you, to maximize your gain or to assure protection from loss? You can't do both. And the more you say, I want to maximize my gain, the more aggressive you want to be at a point in time. And the more you say, I want to protect against maximum loss, the more defensive you want to be at a point in time. And that is always the key trade-off. You can't do both. If you want to be sure of limiting your losses in the months ahead, then you would go with defensive. And whatever is defensive, it's in the new age, defensiveness is a little hard to find, elusive. But utilities, telephones, food, the necessities of life are defensive. By the way, in usual times, toll roads are considered defensive, but they're not very defensive if everybody stops driving. But anyway, the point is, if you want to emphasize downside protection, you're going to go defensive. If you want to maximize recovery potential, you want to go with cyclical in the expectation that there'll be big gains when they come back. So there's no right answer. And your question does not have a correct answer other than to go through what I just went through, which is that every investor has to spec out for himself or herself which is more important, maximizing gains or minimizing losses.
And the last question, how would you think about the behavior, the permanent behavior change of people and businesses as a result of this episode? Do you believe there will be things 5 years from now that people or businesses do differently?
Well, I guess so. You know, one of my favorite quotes from John Kenneth Galbraith is that one of the two outstanding characteristics of the financial markets is the shortness of memory. So these things do tend to get washed away. And I can tell you that in fourth quarter of 08, after the Lehman bankruptcy, when everybody was predicting the end of the financial world, I thought that risk bearing would be very, very slow to recover. And in fact, it recovered within, I would say, 2-3 years, largely because of the government actions. So I tend to probably overstate the changes that these traumas have. Somebody said yesterday, I think people are going to stop shaking hands. It's a crazy pagan custom we have. Why should people touch the hands of strangers? Maybe, who knows? Now, for many, many years, my wife, who for some reason likes having me around the house, says, why are you going on that business trip? Why don't you just phone it in? Why don't you just do a conference call or a video call or something like that? And, you know, we've all canceled all of our travel. Everybody is making do with electronic communication rather than in-person communication. That could be a permanent change, you know? If we were at 100 2 months ago in terms of in-person travel, and if we're at zero today, which I think we are, the interesting question is, are we going back to 100 or are we going back to 75? And if we go back to 75, what does that mean for airlines and hotels? And what does it mean for, in electronic communication facilitators like, Zoom or something like that? So right now, it feels like the end of life as we know it. The answer is probably not. Probably it'll be over in 6 months. In 12 months, we'll have a vaccine. We'll come back. From where we are now, I can't guarantee you we're going all the way back to where we were.
On that note, Howard, thank you very much for your time. I truly appreciate you sharing this perspective with our members.
Well, I hope it's helpful to your members, and I'm glad to help out. Take care, John.
Very best wishes to you and your family this time.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye.